Even Frederick William IV, a man of quite reactionary orientation, a man who was not known for his political acuity, in the 1850s, recognized the important weapon that the Zollverein represented in its dealings with the Habsburgs, and that the Zollverein gave Prussia the lead in any sort of movement for national unification. In 1858, Frederick William IV, who had begun having alarming mental lapses, conducted one too many conversations with the portraits on the wall of the palace on Unter den Linden, and was shoved aside. He was followed by William I. And between 1858 and 1862, William I, reign in Prussia was seen, it was called the New Era. It was a period when liberals thought, well, maybe he will be more liberal than Frederick William IV. He proved not to be, in a political sense. He continued the Zollverein policy. But in 1862, a constitutional crisis arose in Prussia, and William I turned for a political ally to a man of impeccable conservative credentials for his prime minister, and this man was a Prussian Junker, a Prussian nobleman by the name of Otto von Bismarck. Bismarck became chief minister of Prussia in 1858 to shore up the monarchy against a challenge from a liberal majority in the Prussian Chamber of Deputies. Bismarck had very good conservative credentials. He had been active during the Revolution of 1848 as a genuine reactionary. And he was determined to maintain, above all else, the power and independence of the Prussian crown. He was not going to allow the Prussian parliament to impinge upon the power of the Prussian crown. Bismarck, while a conservative, had undergone, however, something of a metamorphosis in the years since 1848. His objectives, his goals, were certainly conservative: maintain the power of the Prussian crown, extend the influence of Prussia. But his methods, his ways of approaching those objectives, had been influenced by what he had seen in France. He'd been ambassador to France. He had watched, he had listened to the various discussions of political transformation, the possible utility of nationalism, for example, as a conservative item. Bismarck would become the exponent par excellence of something called realpolitik. It meant a policy of realism. It meant using whatever method, whatever means were necessary, if they seemed liberal, if they seemed even radical, in order to achieve his conservative objective, then this was what had to be done. He embarked upon a course that would lead ultimately to German unification under Prussian leadership, but he was not a doctrinaire conservative. He hoped to use nationalism as a means of splitting the liberal movement, of weakening the liberal movement in Prussia and in Germany as a whole. Above all else, and I think this needs to be underscored, Otto von Bismarck was not a German nationalist. He cared very little at all about some larger something called Germany. He was a Prussian first, he was a Prussian second, and he was a Prussian third. His goal, he was interested in national unification under one condition only, and that is that it should take place under the auspices of the Hohenzollern monarchy. In order to achieve his goals, he believed in foreign policy that several steps had to be taken. First, he had to deal with the Habsburgs, and that meant to isolate them diplomatically. He had learned the lesson of Olmütz, which was that Prussia acting alone in Germany was not strong enough to deal with the Habsburgs, and so he needed to have good relations with the Tsar, with Russia. And in 1863, an uprising of Poles in the Russian part of Poland was the Bismarck was able to send support to the Tsar to help put down this uprising, cementing good relations between St. Petersburg and Berlin.